Get 25% off all courses at the Academic Agency until the 6th of May using promo code SPRING25. That's promo code SPRING25. Turn a new leaf in your education today.
Peter Hitchens, those who feel disillusioned with the current political system, obviously.
Are right to do so. They have been systematically betrayed, and I see no end to it. There are so many issues which have been visited on this country by an elite of self-selecting, closed-minded people, as well represented here this evening, and actually largely incompetent as well, which have done enormous damage to our way of life. So, for instance, who now has anything to say about the deindustrialization of this country and the destruction of manufacturing jobs under the Thatcher government? Who can reverse it? Who can do anything about it? Who will say anything on this panel about the catastrophe of mass immigration, which has changed this country irrevocably into somewhere completely different from what it was? They won't talk about it. They won't talk seriously about the immense problems of crime and disorder, which affect millions of people in their homes and leave them utterly vulnerable to all kinds of unpleasantness and violence and menace, which they never used to have time to go. And there is no sense whatsoever that there will be any reform of the criminal justice system or any attempt to put it right again. These are just some of the subjects on which this elite just constantly refuse to discuss.
Why?
Because they themselves have an ideology. They themselves have the ideology of metropolitan bourgeois bohemians. They despise most people outside.
What are you, man of the people?
They despise...
I mean, you're the only person on this panel.
I'm no more a man of the people than you are.
I'm
simply saying these are the things which they will not do anything about, which they will not, because they themselves benefit. They themselves benefit from many of the things which do immense damage. They've benefited from globalization. They've benefited from mass immigration.
Let's talk about mass immigration. Let's talk about immigrants coming over here, propping up our NHS, treating us when we're ill.
They're not affected. Their children don't go to bog-standard comprehensives. They're not affected by crime. Yes, I do know how I'm sorry, because I know what they do all the time. They will not discuss these things. They will not do anything about them. They ignore what you say. And you think that at general election time you can do something about it? No, the people who stand before you at general election time for the political parties are people who've been pre-selected. You have no control. If I stood for Parliament, or if he stood for Parliament, from our positions, which are quite popular, the fact is the party machines would erase us. The immense amounts of money they're capable of spending, the enormous access they have to the broadcasting organisations, which we don't have most of the time, would make it impossible. Would make it impossible. On the contrary, would make it impossible for anyone outside the
Conservative
Party.
Peter, sorry. The question was, what would you say to people who feel like you clearly do
what
about
I've just
the
said.
Political association?
I just said it.
Well, no, wait a moment. What would you say to them about how to change things? Are you going to stand as an MP?
No, because for the reasons I've just explained, I wouldn't have the faintest chance. Right. No, my advice to anybody young enough to do so is to emigrate before it's too late.
This is a ridiculous council of despair. I think our country's best days are ahead of us, not behind us. And I think Peter Hitchens needs to get with the programme.
We've all been on a learning curve these past few years in which we've come to understand the true nature of power through a combination of real-world experiences and reading political theory. Seems like Peter Hitchens arrived at the same conclusions 2 decades ago. Recently, I appeared on Guide to Culture as part of the Decameron Film Festival, talking about the awesome movie There Will Be Blood, which I've linked in the show notes. Now, that festival kicked off with an appearance by Keith Woods, who was talking about Adam Curtis's film, Hypernormalization.
But in Russia, there was a group of men who had seen how this very lack of belief in politics and dark uncertainty about the future could work to their advantage. What they had done was turn politics into a strange theatre, where nobody knew what was true or what was fake any longer. They were called political technologists, and they were the key figures behind President Putin. They had kept him in power, unchallenged, for 15 years. Some of them had been dissidents back in the 1970s and had been powerfully influenced by the science fiction writings of the Strugatsky brothers. 20 years later, when Russia fell apart after the end of communism, they rose up and took control of the media. And they used it to manipulate the electorate on a vast scale. For them, reality was just something that could be manipulated and shaped into anything you wanted it to be. But then a technologist emerged who went much further. And his ideas would become central to Putin's grip on power. He was called Vladislav Surkov. Surkov came originally from the theatre world, and those who have studied his career say that what he did was take avant-garde ideas from the theatre and bring them into the heart of politics. Surkov's aim was not just to manipulate people, but to go deeper and play with and undermine their very perception of the world, so they are never sure what is really happening. Surkov turned Russian politics into a bewildering, constantly changing piece of theatre. He used Kremlin money to sponsor all kinds of groups, from mass anti-fascist youth organisations to the very opposite, neo-Nazi skinheads. And liberal human rights groups who then attacked the government. Surkov even backed whole political parties that were opposed to President Putin. But the key thing was that Surkov then let it be known that this was what he was doing, which meant that no one was sure what was real or what was fake in modern Russia. As one journalist put it, it's a strategy of power that keeps any opposition constantly confused. A ceaseless shape-shifting that is unstoppable because it is indefinable. Meanwhile, real power was elsewhere, hidden away behind the stage, exercised without anyone seeing it. And then, the same thing seemed to start happening in the West. By now, it was becoming ever more clear that the system had deep flaws. Every month, there were new revelations of most of the bank's involvement in global corruption, of massive tax avoidance by all the major corporations, of the secret surveillance of everyone's emails by the National Security Agency. Yet no one was prosecuted, except for a few people at the lowest levels. And behind it all, the massive inequality kept on growing. Yet the structure of power remained the same. Nothing ever changed, because nothing could be allowed to destabilise the system.
This was one of the best streams I've seen in a long time, because it summed up many of the lessons we've been drawing for the past couple of years about how power functions, how much popular or plebeian support matters, and how the elites operate. In this video, I've taken five clips from this stream to pull out five key lessons, and I will utilize my trusty blackboard in the process.
Yeah, it is interesting because I've also stated this repeatedly, that we are in a sort of a post-political age, because party politics and just mainstream politics in general is a thing of the past in a way, because politics now is more or less just about administration. It's an administrative class. It isn't the different political parties don't have in any significant sense different political visions that they want to implement. Is they want to implement the same thing in different ways or to different degrees, slightly different degrees. So in that sense, the political class is they're just bureaucrats now. They are administrators, and
politicians are just the most visible layer of the unaccountable managerial elite. The idea that elected officials actually matter should be a joke to us in 2021. anyone here in Britain can see that Boris Johnson is basically told what to do. In America, we saw that even if an outsider like Donald Trump formally gets into power, in actuality, he has no power at all. It is almost like he was never actually the president. Elections are just lip service to the idea of popular sovereignty, which has, in actuality, always been a myth.
You know, in all of these documentaries, he does great work showing, you know, the power structures behind supposedly democratic movements. Like, one of the things he shows is that the Egyptian revolution was started by a guy that worked for Google. And, you know, if you look into it, Google and Facebook and most of the other big tech companies had startup funding from the CIA and were heavily intertwined with the deep state.
Second lesson is that all revolutions are astroturfed from the top down. One of the most pernicious lies perpetuated by the system, especially through popular history and formal education, is the idea that people power, organic bottom-up movements, peasants, revolts, and so on, have the power to change anything. This is not the case, and every popular protest that has been successful in any respect has been astroturfed by elites, whether domestic or foreign. The elites will decide if something needs to change, and then use the astroturfed popular movement to give it the appearance of being championed for by the people. When such popular movements do not have elite support, they become a mere rabble. They flail and ultimately fail, as we saw with the huge numbers of people who supported Donald Trump and ended up being presented by the elites as lunatics and terrorists.
Well, one perfect example of it that I saw today, which the numbers even surprised me, was there's a poll about the George Floyd murder trial that's going on right now. And only 26% of Americans think that George Floyd was murdered. So what's that? 74% of Americans think that, you know, this was basically a big deal about nothing, and they're not on the side of BLM in this case. But I mean, I bet if you went up to 100 random Americans and asked them, do they support it? You know, would 74 of them say no? Definitely not. I think maybe 4 or 5 of them might if they were feeling brave. But that's a perfect example of it. You know, Vaclav Havel had a similar observation. He talked about the greengrocer in the Soviet Union and an essay called The Power of the Powerless that would put out the Workers of the World Unite sign every morning, even though he didn't believe it. And all the other businessmen would do the same. And, you know, if one of them didn't, then another one would probably snitch on them, even though none of them believed in it. So it's the same idea. But what I think is interesting is, you know, that was a totalitarian system, obviously. And there's a very conscious thing that, you know, if I don't pay lip service to the system, I may end up disappearing or something. But it's much more subtle how this functions now. And I think you see it with how popular irony is. And that, you know, irony, one writer described it before that irony is the song of a caged bird that has come to love its cage. And you see this kind of, I mean, Zizek talks about this a lot, like sort of legitimating function of irony, but it's like, you know, irony is no longer like a way to challenge the power system or to expose hypocrisy, which is like the intended function of it. But it's this way to kind of paying lip service to the detachment that everyone is meant to feel in a postmodern society. So.
The third lesson, public opinion doesn't matter and is subordinate to official discourse, which everyone fakes, even if you genuinely believe it. The example of Question Time, from which I showed the Peter Hitchens clip at the start, is the best. Even if every member of the panel and the audience knows deep down that what Hitchens was saying is true and secretly agreed with him, they wouldn't admit it because the fiction of the official discourse must be maintained. I am reminded of the film The Death of Stalin, in which we see how this functioned in the Soviet Union. The politically correct line on any issue could change without notice, and yet all officials of the state maintained the fiction and paid lip service to it.
Another aspect of this, though, with this fakeness of society, because a lot of, like, the conspiracy theorists, the people who believe that 9/11 didn't happen, for example, the people who believe in all these false flag attacks, there's a sense in which those false flag theories are based on a false premise, namely the premise that the elites need our approval, right? I mean, if we pretend that people didn't, and this is something that he brings up in the documentary, and I've often thought about this because it's a relevant aspect of how power works in a modern society. They don't need our approval. If they want to start a war and 80% of the population is against that war, they can still go ahead and start that war because we have no say in the matter. So in a sense, the conspiracy theorists who believe in false flag operations, in a sense, they are too optimistic about the political system because the elites don't need our approval to start wars. What are your thoughts on that, Keith?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's also this weird polarization paradox where, I mean, you would think, like, with all of these radical ideologies popping up now, you know, there's all of these bread tubers, there's radical anarchists, there's Antifa, there's growth of the alt-right in 2016, and there's like, the center is disappearing, and everyone is going way out, far left, far right. You know, who identifies now as a centrist or a social democrat or Christian conservative or something? It's all out on the extremes. And you would think that that would create like chaos in politics, that you'll have all of these radical candidates, you know, that, you know, you'll have a radical like borderline fascist versus a borderline communist for the presidential election in the US. But what did you actually have in the US? Well, you had Trump, who was basically running on a platform that could have been Mitt Romney in 2012 or Jeb Bush in 2016, you know, run-of-the-mill Republican, basically. And you had Joe Biden, who's, you know, Mr. neoliberal, Barack Obama's vice president. So, I mean, it was really no different than if you would have had Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton in 2016 in terms of the actual policies. But because you have so much polarization, because you have the proliferation of all this new information and hatred on each side, you know, everyone sees this as every election is the most important ever. You know, for the right, it's like if we don't win this election, we're all going to be gulagged. And for the left, it's like if we don't win this election, there's going to be like outright fascism in America. And the reality is, you know, the same people that were running the show are going to continue running the show. You know, like the important issues like foreign policy are basically bipartisan now anyway. So it is this weird thing, you know, like we always think, a lot of people on the sort of populist right think, like, if we just get enough people angry at the system, if we just get enough people to lose faith in the system, inevitably the system has to come down. But what you actually observe is that, if anything, people tend to become hopeless and become apolitical. And that's actually good for the planners. You know, it's like before the election, people were like, well, you know, if Trump doesn't win, you know, you're going to have all of these people that are just so alienated and just won't tolerate this, and it has to end in civil war. And actually it was quite peaceful. I mean, I actually expected more violence. You know, there was obviously the Capitol Hill stuff, but I mean, apart from that, I mean, it was a pretty smooth transition of power. So, you know, the idea that polarization itself will save us, that everyone getting alienated and angry at the system is going to affect change, really doesn't bear out in reality. If anything, people kind of just retreat into their own internet communities, they become detached, they become alienated. And, you know, that benefits the people in power.
The fourth lesson, elites don't need public approval. Surely at this point you can see that the elites simply do not care about what you or anyone else thinks. They don't respond to any feedback, and they don't do anything more than make empty noises at election time. We are bombarded with polls all the time, as if they matter. They do not matter. The purpose of all this propaganda is not to convert you to actually believe whatever it is they want you to believe. It is to make actual resistance to the system seem nearly impossible. It is to demoralize in order to maintain power. Total disillusionment in the system actually ends up strengthening it, and it works very well. Remember that voter turnout was very low during the Blair years. New Labour always spun that as the tacit consent of the masses.
Yeah, and not only that, the elites played up the violence. I mean, they pretended that the resistance was bigger than it actually is. And that tells you something about how this mind game works, right? I mean, they pretended that there was a huge threat, a right-wing threat. And so you know, why are they doing that? Of course, so that they can create more and more draconian rules against hate speech and things like that. But also, I mean, that also means that they aren't the least bit worried about any threat from the right, because if they were, they wouldn't give it a boost by saying that, oh, these people are much more powerful than they actually are. So it sort of all plays into the whole game, the whole narrative, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He covers that a lot more in some of his other documentaries, like The Power of Nightmares. A lot of his documentaries are very focused on this, how most of the scares, most of the terror threats are completely created by the people in power. You know, like, he uses the example of Al-Qaeda in The Power of Nightmares, that he said basically Al-Qaeda as a centralized organization never existed. It's just the disparate, like, terror groups that the U.S. decided to label Al-Qaeda so it could be more, you know, a more centralized, serious threat that they could go to war with. And, you know, a lot of people would be familiar, like the CIA literally trained Osama bin Laden. Brzezinski, who was a major planner at the time, was consciously arming Islamic terrorists in Afghanistan to try and weaken the Soviet Union. And, you know, I think we're seeing a similar kind of fictional scare now with nationalism, and that they're you know, it's no longer about Islamic terrorism, which they created to justify fighting wars abroad, which they needed at the time for various reasons. But now they want to focus, as you said, on more control at home. More control of speech, more control of the internet, more control of some of these narratives that don't benefit them. And so the new scare isn't going to be communism as it was in the Cold War. It's not going to be Islamic terrorism as it was after the Cold War. Now it's going to be the domestic terror threat. It's going to be the threat of, you know, white terror. And you see the way that they spin this, you know, any kind of terrorist attack, like the one that happened a couple of weeks ago where some guy shot up a brothel and it was immediately linked to race, even though there was no evidence of that. And you can just see the direction they're going in, where there's going to be a new moral scare that will be completely sort of top-down manufactured. And yeah, it will be used for more consolidation of power.
Finally, threats and resistance to the system can be exaggerated and used to strengthen the power of the system. To have an outgroup, an enemy, can be galvanizing and used to tremendous effect by those in power. Their current strategy of making the enemy outgroup about a third to a half of the entire population is an interesting one, and it remains to be seen if this can work. But it should be absolutely clear to you by now that this is what is happening. What they said about the jihadis in the mid-2000s, they are now saying about white men and the quote-unquote right wing today. So there we are. Five lessons. Tell me what you think of them. Till next time.
Get 25% off all courses at the Academic Agency until the 6th of May using promo code SPRING25. That's promo code SPRING25. Turn a new leaf in your education today. Buy Foundations of Writing on the Academic Agency. To write clearly will help you to think clearly. The ability to communicate ideas in lucid prose is foundational to success in many areas, and it is a basic requirement in every walk of life. You will learn the parts of speech and come to understand the core functions of the English language, sentence construction and syntax, punctuation, style, and common mistakes. Once you see how mistakes are made, you will not unsee them. You will know for the rest of your life. Foundations of Writing. Buy it now.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe, and if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.